Joe R. Lansdale. Prolific Texas writer Joe R. Lansdale has won the Edgar Award, the British Fantasy Award, the American Horror Award, the American Mystery Award, the International Crime Writers Award, and 6 Bram Stoker Awards. Although perhaps best known for horror thrillers such as The Night Runners, Baba Hotep, The Bottoms, The God of the Razor, and The Drive-In, he also writes the popular Hap Collins and Leonard Pine mystery series, Savage Season, Mucho Mojo, The Two Bear Mambo, Bad Chili, Rumble Tumble, Captain's Outrageous, as well as Western novels such as Texas Night Riders and Blood Dance, and totally unclassifiable cross-genre novels such as Zeppelin's West, The Magic Wagon, and Flaming London. His other novels include Dead in the West, The Big Blow, Sunset and Sawdust, Act of Love, Freezer Burn, Waltz of Shadows, The Drive-In 2, not just one of them sequels, and Leather Maiden. He has also contributed novels to series such as Batman and Tarzan. His many short stories have been collected in By Bizarre Hands, Tight Little Stitches in a Dead Man's Back, The Shadows Kith and Kin, The Long Ones, Stories by Mama Lansdale's Youngest Boy, Bestsellers Guaranteed, On the Far Side of the Cadillac Desert with Dead Folks, Electric Gumbo, Writer of the Purple Rage, A Fistful of Stories, Stepping Out, Summer 68, Bumper Crop, The Good, the Bad, and the Indifferent. For a few stories more, Mad Dog Summer and Other Stories, The King and Other Stories, Dead Man's Road, An Omnibus, Flaming Zeppelins, The Adventures of Ned the Seal, and High Cotton. Selected stories of Joe R. Lansdale. As editor, he has produced the anthologies The Best of the West, Retro Pulp Tales, Son of Retro Pulp Tales, Razored Saddles with Pat Labruto, Dark at Heart, All New Tales of Dark Suspense from Today's Masters with wife Karen Lansdale, The Horror Hall of Fame, The Stoker Winners, and the Robert E. Howard Tribute Anthology, Cross Plains Universe with Scott A. Cupp. An anthology in tribute to Lansdale's work is Lords of the Razor. His most recent books are 2 new Hap and Leonard novels, Edge of Dark Water, a new collection, Shadows West, with John L. Lansdale. And as editor, 2 new anthologies, Crucified Dreams and the Urban Fantasy Anthology with Peter S. Beagle. He lives with his family in Nacogdoches, Texas. Here, he introduces us to the best bad girl ever, a woman who has the mojo, the black doo-doo, and the silent dog whistle over every man she meets, a woman like a bright red apple with a worm in the center, one who could make a priest go home and cut his throat if he saw her walking down the street. In short, a character that only Lansdale could write.
Wrestling Jesus by Joe R. Lansdale. Read for you by Scott Brick. First they took Marvin's sack lunch, then his money, and then they kicked his ass. In fact, he felt the ass-whipping, had it been put on a scale of 1 to 10, was probably about a 14. However, Marvin factored in that some of the beating had been inconsistent, as one of his attackers had paused to light a cigarette, and afterwards 2 of them had appeared tired and out of breath. Lying there, tasting blood, he liked to think that, taking in the pause for a smoke and the obvious exhaustion of a couple of his assailants, points could be taken away from their overall performance, and their rating would merely have been 9 or 10 instead of the full 14. This, however, didn't help his ribs one little bit, and it didn't take away the spots swimming before his eyes just before he passed out from the pain. When he awoke, he was being slapped awake by one of the bullies who wanted to know if he had any gold teeth. He said he didn't, and the thug insisted on seeing, and Marvin opened his mouth, and the mugger took a look. Disappointed, the thug threatened to piss in his mouth or fuck him, but the thug and his gang were either too tired from beating him to fuck him or weren't ready to make water because they started walking away, splitting up his money in fourths as they walked. They had each made about $3.20, and from his backpack they had taken a pretty good ham sandwich and a little container of Jell-O. There was, however, only one plastic spoon. Marvin was beginning to feel one with the concrete when a voice said, "You little shits think you're something, don't you?" Blinking, Marvin saw that the speaker was an old man, slightly stooped, bow-legged, with white hair and a face that looked as if it had once come apart and been puzzled back together by a drunk in a dark room with cheap glue. His ear, Marvin could see the right one, contained enough hair to knit a small dog sweater. It was the only visible hair the man had that was black. The hair on his head was the color of a fish belly. He was holding up his loose pants with one hand. His skin was dark as a walnut, and his mouth was a bit overfull with dentures. One of his pants pockets was swollen with something. Marvin thought it might be his balls. A rupture. The gang stopped in their tracks and turned. They were nasty-looking fellows with broad shoulders and muscles. One of them had a large belly, but it was hard. And Marvin knew for a fact they all of them had hard fists and harder shoes. The old man was about to wake up dead. The one who had asked Marvin if he had any gold teeth, the hard belly, looked at the old man and said, as he put down Marvin's stolen backpack, "You talking to us, you old geezer?" "You're the only shit I see," said the old man. "You think you're a real bad man, don't you? Anyone can beat up some pussy like this kid. My crippled grandma could, and she's been dead some 20 years. Kid's maybe 16. What are you fucks, 20? You're a bunch of cunts without any hair on your slit." Marvin tried to crawl backwards until he was out of sight, not wanting to revive their interest in him, and thinking he might get away while they were killing the old man. But he was too weak to crawl. Hardbelly started strutting toward the old man, grinning, preening. When he was about 6 feet away, the old man said, "You gonna fight me by yourself, little shit? You don't need your gang to maybe hold me? I'm gonna kick out any real teeth you got, you old spick," said Hardbelly. "Ain't got no real ones, so have at it." The boy stepped in and kicked at the old man, who slapped his leg aside with his left hand, never taking the right away from holding up his pants, and hit him with a hard left jab to the mouth and knocked him down and made his lips bleed. When Hardbelly tried to get up, the old man made with a sharp kick to the windpipe. Hardbelly dropped, gagging, clutching at his throat. "How's about you girls? You up for it, you little cunts?" The little cunts shook their heads. "That's good," said the old man, and pulled a chain out of his pocket. That had been the bulk in his pocket, not a ruptured knot. He was still holding his pants with his other hand. "I got me an equalizer here. I'll wrap this motherfucker around your head like an anchor chain. Come over here and get Mr. Butthole and take him away from me, and fast." The three boys pulled Mr. Butthole, a.k.a. Hardbelly, to his feet, and when they did, the old man pushed his face close to Hardbelly's and said, "Don't come back around here. I don't want to see you no more." "You'll be sorry, Spick," said Hardbelly, bubbling blood over his lips and down his chin. The old man dropped the chain on the ground and popped Hardbelly with a left jab again, breaking Hardbelly's nose, spewing blood all over his face. "What the fuck you got in your ears?" the old man said. "Mud? Huh? You got mud? You hear me talking to you? Adios, asshole." the three boys, and Hardbelly, who was wobbling, made their way down the street and were gone. The old man looked down at Marvin, who was still lying on the ground.
"I've had worse beatings than that from my old mother, and she was missing an arm. Get the hell up."
Marvin managed to get his feet under him, thinking it a feat equal with building one of the Great Pyramids, alone.
"What you come around here for?" the old man said. "Ain't nobody around here but shits. You look like a kid might come from someplace better."
Marvin shook his head. "No," he said. "I'm from around here."
"Since when?"
"Since a week ago."
"Yeah?
You moved here on purpose, or you just lose your map?"
"On purpose."
"Well, kid,
you maybe better think about moving away."
There was nothing Marvin wanted to do more than move, but his mother said no dice. They didn't have the money, not since his father died. That had nipped them in the bud, and quite severely, that dying business. Marvin's dad had been doing all right at the factory, but then he died, and since then their lives had gone downhill faster than a little red wagon stuffed full of bricks. He and his mom had to be where they were, and there was nothing else to be said about it. A downgrade for them would be a cardboard box with a view. An upgrade would have been lifts in their shoes.
"I can't move. Mama doesn't have the money for it. She does laundry."
"Yeah, well, you better learn to stand up for yourself then," said the old man.
"You don't, you might just wake up with your pants down and your asshole big as a dinner plate."
"They'd really do that?"
"Wouldn't put it past them," said the old man. "You better learn to fight back."
"Can you teach me?"
"Teach you what?"
"To fight."
"I can't do it. I have to hold my pants up."
"Get yourself a stick."
"You could teach me, though." "I don't want to, kid. I got a full-time job just trying to stay breathing. I'm nearly 80 fucking years old. I ought to have been feeding the worms 5 years ago." "Listen up. You stay away from here. And if you can't, well, good luck, boy."
Holding his pants with one hand, the old man shuffled away. Marvin watched him go for a moment, and then fled. It was his plan to make it through the week when school would turn out for the summer, and then he'd just stay in the apartment and never leave until school started up in the fall. By then, maybe he could formulate a new plan. He hoped that in that time the boys would have lost interest in punching him, or perhaps been killed in some dreadful manner, or moved off themselves. Started a career, though he had a pretty good idea they had already started one. Professional thugs. He told his mother he fell down. She believed him. She was too preoccupied with trying to keep food on the table to think otherwise, and he didn't want her to know anyway. Didn't want her to know he couldn't take care of himself, and that he was a walking punching bag. Thing was, she wasn't too alert to his problems. She had the job, and now she had a boyfriend, a house painter. The painter was a tall, gangly guy that came over and watched TV and drank beer, then went to bed with his mother. Sometimes, when he was sleeping on the couch, he could hear them back there. He didn't remember ever hearing that kind of thing when his dad was alive, and he didn't know what to think about it. When it got really loud, he'd wrap his pillow around his ears and try to sleep. During the summer, he saw some ads online about how you could build your body, and he sent off for a DVD. He started doing push-ups and sit-ups and a number of other exercises. He didn't have money for the weights, the DVD suggested. The DVD cost him what little money he had saved, mostly a nickel here, a quarter there, change his mother gave him. But he figured if his savings kept him from an ass-whipping, it was worth every penny. Marvin was consistent in his workouts. He gave them everything he had, and pretty soon his mother mentioned that he seemed to be looking stronger. Marvin thought so, too. In fact, he actually had muscles. His arms were knotted, and his stomach was pretty flat, and his thighs and calves had grown. He could throw a jab and a cross now. He found a guide online for how to do it. He was planning on working on the uppercut next, maybe the hook. But right now, he had the jab and the cross down. "All right," he said to the mirror. "Let them come. I'm ready." After the first day of school in the fall, Marvin went home the same way he had that fateful day he had taken a beating. He didn't know exactly how he felt about what he was doing. He hoped he would never see them again on one hand, and on the other, he felt strong now, felt he could handle himself. Marvin stuck his hand in his pocket and felt for the money he had there. Not much, a dollar or so in change. More money saved up from what his mother gave him. And he had his pack on his back. They might want that. He had to remember to come out of it, put it aside if he had to fight. No hindrances. When he was where it happened before, there was no one. He went home feeling a bit disappointed. He would have enjoyed banging their heads together. On his third day after school, he got his chance. There were only two of them this time, Hardbelly and one of the weasels that had been with him before. When they spotted him, Hardbelly smiled and moved toward Marvin quickly, the weasel trailing behind as if looking for scraps. "Well now," Hardbelly said as he got closer, "you remember me?" "Yes," Marvin said. "You ain't too smart, are you, kid? Thought you had done moved off. Thought I'd never get a chance to hit you again. That old man, I want you to know, he caught me by surprise. I could have kicked his ass from Monday to next Sunday. You can't whip me, let alone him." "Oh, so during the summer you grew a pair of balls." "Big pair." "Big pair, huh? I bet you I can take that pack away from you and make you kiss my shoes. I can make you kiss my ass." "I'm gonna whip your ass," Marvin said. The bully's expression changed, and Marvin didn't remember much after that. He didn't come awake until Hardbelly was bent over saying, "Now kiss it, and pucker good. A little tongue would be nice. You don't, Pogo here, he's going to take out his knife and cut your dick off. You hear?" Marvin looked at Hardbelly. Hardbelly dropped his pants and bent over with his hands on his knees, his asshole winking at Marvin. The weasel was riffling through Marvin's backpack, strewing things left and right. "Lick or get cut," Hardbelly said. Marvin coughed out some blood and started to try and crawl away. "Lick it," Hardbelly said. "Lick it till I feel good. Come on, boy. Taste some shit." A foot flew out and went between Hardbelly's legs, caught his nuts with a sound like a beaver's tail slapping on water. Hardbelly screamed, went forward on his head as if he were trying to do a headstand. "Don't never do it, kid," a voice said. "It's better to get your throat cut." It was the old man. He was standing close by. He wasn't holding his pants this time. He had on a belt. Pogo came at the old man and swung a wild right at him. The old man didn't seem to move much, but somehow he went under the punch, and when he came up, the uppercut that Marvin had not practiced was on exhibition. It hit Pogo under the chin, and there was a snapping sound, and Pogo, the weasel, seemed to lose his head for a moment. It stretched his neck like it was made of rubber. Spittle flew out of Pogo's mouth, and Pogo collapsed on the cement in a wad. The old man wobbled over to Hardbelly, who was on his hands and knees, trying to get up, his pants around his ankles. The old man kicked him between the legs a couple of times. The kicks weren't pretty, but they were solid. Hardbelly spewed a turd and fell on his face.
"You need to wipe up," the old man said.
But Hardbelly wasn't listening. He was lying on the cement, making a sound like a truck trying to start. The old man turned and looked at Marvin.
"I thought I was ready,"
Marvin said.
"You ain't even close, kid. If you can walk, come with me."
Marvin could walk, barely.
"You got some confidence somewhere," the old man said. "I seen that right off. But you didn't have no reason for it." "I did some training."
"Yeah, well, swimming on dry land ain't the same as getting into it. There's things you can do that's just in the air, or with a partner that can make a real difference, but you don't get no feel for nothing. I hadn't come along, you'd have been licking some ass crack and calling it a snow cone. Let me tell you, son, don't never do that. Not unless it's a lady's ass and you've been invited. Someone wants to make you do something like that, you die first. You do that kind of thing once, you'll have the taste of shit in your mouth for the rest of your life."
"I guess it's better than being dead," Marvin said.
"No, it ain't neither. Let me tell you. Once I had me a little dog. He wasn't no bigger than a minute, but he had heart big as all the outdoors. Me and him took walks. One day we was walking along, not far from here, actually, and there was this German shepherd out nosing in some garbage cans. Rough-looking old dog, and it took in after my little dog. Mike was his name, and it was a hell of a fight. Mike wouldn't give. He fought to the death."
"He got killed?"
"Nah, the shepherd got killed."
"Mike killed the shepherd?"
"Nah, course not. I'm jerking you. I hit the shepherd with a board I picked up. But the lesson here is you gotta do your best, and sometimes you gotta hope there's someone around on your side with a board."
"Are you saying I'm Mike and you're the guy with the board?"
"I'm saying you can't fight for shit. That's what I'm saying."
"What happened to Mike?"
"Got hit by a truck he was chasing. He was tough and willing, but he didn't have no sense. Kinda like you. Except you ain't tough. And another drawback you got is you ain't a dog. Another thing, that's twice I saved you, so you owe me something."
"What's that?"
"Well, you want to learn to fight, right?" Marvin nodded. "And I need a workout partner." The old man's place wasn't far from the fight scene. It was a big two-story concrete building. The windows were boarded over. When they got to the front door, the old man pulled out a series of keys and went to work on several locks. While he did that, he said, "You keep a lookout. I gotta really be careful when I do this, 'cause there's always some asshole wanting to break in. I've had to hurt some jackasses more than once. Why, I keep that 2x4 there in the can." Marvin looked. There was indeed a 2x4 stuffed down inside a big trash can. The 2x4 was all that was in it. The old man unlocked the door and they went inside. The old man flicked some lights and everything went bright. He then went to work on the locks, clicked them into place. They went along a narrow hall into a wide space, a very wide space. What was there was a bed and a toilet out in the open on the far wall, and on the other wall was a long plank table and some chairs. There was a hot plate on the table, and above and behind it were some shelves stuffed with canned goods. There was an old refrigerator, one of those bullet-shaped things. It hummed loudly, like a child with a head injury. Next to the table was a sink, and not far from that was a shower, with a one-screen curtain pulled around a metal scaffold. There was a TV under some posters on the wall, and a few thick chairs with the stuffing leaking out. There was a boxing ring in the middle of the room. In the ring was a thick mat, taped all over with duct tape. The sun-faded posters were of men in tights, crouched in boxing or wrestling positions. One of them said, "Danny Baca, X-Man." Marvin studied the poster. It was a little wrinkled at the corners, badly framed, and the glass was specked with dust.
"That's me," the old man said.
Marvin turned and looked at the old man, looked back at the poster.
"It's me before wrinkles and bad knees."
"You were a professional wrestler?" Marvin said.
"Nah, I was selling shoes. You're slow on the upbeat, kid. Good thing I was out taking my walk again, or flies would be having you for lunch."
"Why were you called X-Man?"
"Because you got in the ring with me, they could cross you off the list. Put an X through your name." "Shit, I think that was it. It's been so long ago, I ain't sure no more. What's your name, by the way?"
"Marvin."
"All right, Marvin. Let's you and me go over to the ring."
The old man dodged through the ropes easily. Marvin found the ropes were pulled taut, and he had more trouble sliding between them than he thought. Once in the ring, the old man said,
"Here's the thing. What I'm going to do is I'm going to give you a first lesson, and you're going to listen to me."
"Okay."
"What I want, and I ain't fucking with you here, is I want you to come at me hard as you can. Try and hit me, take me down, bite my ear off, whatever."
"I can't hurt you."
"I know that."
"I'm not saying I'm not willing," Marvin said. "I'm saying I know I can't. You've beat a guy twice I've had trouble with, and his friends, and I couldn't do nothing, so I know I can't hurt you."
"You got a point, kid. But I'm wanting you to try. It's a lesson."
"You'll teach me how to defend myself?"
"Sure."
Marvin charged, ducking low, planning to try and take the old man's feet. The old man squatted, almost sitting on his ass, and threw a quick uppercut. Marvin dreamed he was flying, then falling. The lights in the place were spotted suddenly. Then the spots went away, and there was only brightness. Marvin rolled over on the mat and tried to get up. His eye hurt something awful.
"You hit me,"
he said when he made a sitting position. The old man was in a corner of the ring, leaning on the ropes.
"Don't listen to shit like someone saying, 'Come and get me.' That's foolish. That's leading you into something you might not like. Play your game."
"You told me to."
"That's right, kid. I did."
"That's your first lesson. Think for yourself. And don't listen to some fool giving you advice. And like I said, play your own game."
"I don't have a game," Marvin said.
"We both know that, kid. But we can fix it." Marvin gingerly touched his eye.
"So, you're going to teach me?"
"Yeah, but the second lesson is this. Now you gotta listen to every goddamn word I say."
"But you said..."
"I know what I said, but part of lesson two is this. Life is full of all kinds of contradictions." It was easy to get loose to go to practice, but it wasn't easy getting there. Marvin still had the bullies to worry about. He got up early and went, telling his mother he was exercising at the school track. The old man's home turned out to be what was left of an old TB hospital, which was why the old man bought it cheap. Sometime at the far end of the Jurassic, Marvin figured. The old man taught him how to move, how to punch, how to wrestle, how to throw. When Marvin threw the X-Man, the old guy would land lightly and get up quickly and complain about how it was done. When the workout was done, Marvin showered in the big room behind the faded curtain and went home the long way, watching for bullies. After a while, he began to feel safe, having figured out that whatever time schedule the delinquents kept, it wasn't early morning, and it didn't seem to be early evening. When summer ended and school started up, Marvin went before and after school to train, told his mother he was studying boxing with some kids at the Y. She was all right with that. She had work and the house painter on her mind. The guy would be sitting there when Marvin came home evenings, sitting there looking at the TV, not even nodding when Marvin came in, sometimes sitting in the padded TV chair with Marvin's mother on his knee, his arm around her waist, her giggling like a schoolgirl. It was enough to gag a maggot. It got so home was not a place Marvin wanted to be. He liked the old man's place. He liked the training. He threw lefts and rights, hooks and uppercuts, into a bag the old man hung up. He sparred with the old man, who, once he got tired, and considering his age it seemed a long time, would just knock him down and go lean on the ropes and breathe heavily for a while. One day, after they had finished, sitting in chairs near the ring, Marvin said, "So, how am I helping you train?" "You're a warm body, for one thing. And I got this fight coming up." "A fight? What are you, an echo?" "Yeah, I got a fight coming up. Every 5 years, me and Jesus the Bomb go at it, on Christmas Eve." Marvin just looked at him. The old man looked back, said, "Think I'm too old? How old are you?"
17.
"Can I whip your ass, kid?"
"Everyone can whip my ass."
"All right. That's a point you got there," the old man said. "Why every 5 years?" Marvin asked. "Why this Jesus guy?"
"Maybe I'll tell you later," the old man said.
Things got bad at home. Marvin hated the painter, and the painter hated him. His mother loved the painter and stood by him. Everything Marvin tried to do was tainted by the painter. He couldn't take the trash out fast enough. He wasn't doing good enough in school for the painter, like the painter had ever graduated so much as kindergarten. Nothing satisfied the painter, and when Marvin complained to his mother, it was the painter she stood behind. The painter was nothing like his dad, nothing, and he hated him. One day he told his mother he'd had enough. It was him or the painter. She chose the painter. "Well, I hope the crooked painting son of a bitch makes you happy," he said. "Where did you learn such language?" she asked. He had learned a lot of it from the old man, but he said, "The painter."
"Did not," his mother said.
"Did too." Marvin put his stuff in a suitcase that belonged to the painter and left. He waited for his mother to come chasing after him. But she didn't. She called out as he went up the street, "You're old enough. You'll be all right." He found himself at the old man's place. Inside the doorway, suitcase in hand, the old man looked at him, nodded at the suitcase, said,
"What are you doing with that shit?"
"I got thrown out," Marvin said. Not quite the truth, but he felt it was close enough.
"You mean to stay here? That what you're after?"
"Just till I get on my feet."
"On your feet?" the X-Man said. "You ain't got no job. You ain't got dick. You're like a fucking vagabond."
"Yeah," Marvin said. "Well, all right." Marvin turned around, thinking maybe he could go home and kiss some ass. Maybe tell the painter he was a good guy or something. He got to the door and the old man said, "Where the fuck you going?"
"Leaving." "You wanted me to, didn't you?" "Did I say that? Did I say anything like that? I said you were a vagabond. I didn't say something about leaving."
"Here, give me the goddamn suitcase."
Before Marvin could do anything, X-Man took it and started down the hall toward the great room. Marvin watched him go, a wiry, balding, white-haired old man with a slight bow-legged limp to his walk. One night, watching wrestling on TV, the old man, having sucked down a six-pack, said, "This is shit. Bunch of fucking tough acrobats. This ain't wrestling. It ain't boxing, and it sure ain't fighting. It's like a movie show or something. When we wrestled in fairs, we really wrestled. These big-ass fuckers wouldn't know a wrist lock from a dick jerk. Look at that shit. Guy waits for the fucker to climb on the ropes and jump on him. And what kind of hit is that? That was a real hit, motherfucker would be dead, hitting him in the throat like that. He's slapping the guy's chest high up, that's all. Cocksuckers."
"When you wrestled, where did you do it?" Marvin asked.
The old man clicked off the TV.
"I can't take no more of that shit. Where did I wrestle? I rode the rails during the Great Depression. I was 10 years old on them rails, and I'd go from town to town and watch guys wrestle at fairs. And I began to pick it up. When I was 15, I said I was 18, and they believed me, ugly as I was. I mean, who wants to think a kid can be so goddamn ugly, you know? So by the end of the Great Depression, I'm wrestling all over the place. Let me see, it's 1992, so I've been doing it a while. Come the war, they wouldn't let me go because of a rupture. I used to wrap that sucker up with a bunch of sheet strips and go and wrestle. I could have fought Japs bundled up like that if they let me. Did have to stop now and then when my nuts stuck out of the rip in my balls. I'd cross my legs, suck it up, and push them back in, cinch up those strips of sheet and keep on keeping on. I could have done that in the war, but they were all prissy about it. Said it'd be a problem. So I didn't kill no Japs. I could have, though. Germans, Hungarians, Martians. I could kill anybody they put me in front of. Of course, glad I didn't, in one way. And good to kill a man. But them son of a bitches were asking for it. Well, I don't know about the Hungarians or the Martians, but the rest of them bastards were. I learned fighting by hard knocks. Now and then, I met some guys knew a thing or two, and I picked it up. Some of them Jap tricks and the like. I had folks down in Mexico. So, when I was in my 20s, I went there and became a wrestler for money. Wasn't that fake?"
The old man gave Marvin a look that made the water inside Marvin's body boil.
"There was them that put on shows, but then there was us. Me and Jesus, and ones like us. We did the real thing. We was hitting and kicking and locking and throwing. Look at this."
The old man jerked up a sleeve on his sweatshirt. There was a mark there like a tire track.
"See that? Jesus bit me. I had him in a clench and he bit me. Motherfucker. Of course, that's what I'd have done. Anyway, he got loose on account of it. He had this technique, the bomb, he called it, how he got his nickname. He'd grab you in a bear hug, front or back, lift you up and fall back and drive your head into the mat. You got that done to you once or twice. You felt like your ears were wiggling around your asshole. It was something. Me, I had me the step over toehold. That was my move. And still is."
"Did you use it on Jesus?"
"Nope. He got the bomb on me. After the bomb, I thought I was in Africa, fucking a gorilla. I didn't know my dick from a candle wick.
But you're still wrestling him?
Haven't beat him yet. I've tried every hold there is, every move, every kind of psychology I know, and nothing. It's the woman, Felina Valdez. She's got the mojo on me, the juju, the black doo-doo, and the silent dog whistle. Whatever there is that makes you stupid, she's got it on me.
Marvin didn't follow any of that, but he didn't say anything. He drank his glass of tea while X-Man drank another beer. He knew he would come back to the subject eventually. That's how he worked.
Let me tell you about Felina. She was a black-eyed maiden, had smooth, dark skin. A priest saw her walking down the street, he'd go home and cut his throat. First time I seen her, that stack of dynamite was in a blue dress so tight you could count the hairs on her thingamajig. She was there in the crowd to watch the wrestling. She's in the front row with her legs crossed, and her dress is slithering up to her knee like a snake creeping, and I'm getting a pretty good look, you see. Not seeing the vine-covered canyon, but I'm in the neighborhood. And looking at that broad, I'm almost killed by this wrestler named Joey the Yank, guy from Maine who takes my legs out from under me and butts me and gets me in an armbar. I barely manage to work out of it, get him and throw him and latch on my step-over toehold. I put that on you, you pass through time, baby, past and future, and finally you're looking at your own goddamn grave. He tapped out. Next thing I know, this blue-dressed doll is sliding up next to me, taking my arm, and well, kid, from that point on, I was a doomed man. She could do more tricks with a dick than a magician could with a deck of cards. I thought she was gonna kill me, but I thought, too, it was one hell of a good way to go. Hear what I'm saying?
Yes, sir, Marvin said.
This is all kind of nasty talk for a kid, ain't it?
No, sir, Marvin said.
Fuck it. You're damn near 18. By now, you gotta know about pussy.
I know what it is, Marvin said.
No, kid. You talk like you know where it is, not what it is. Me? I was lost in that stuff. I might as well have let her put my nuts in a vise and crank it. She started going to all my fights. And I noticed something pretty quick. I gave a great performance, won by a big margin. The loving was great. It was a mediocre fight. So was the betting. I had it figured. She wasn't so much in love with me as she was a good fight and my finishing move, the step-over toe hold. She had me teach it to her. I let her put it on me one time, and kid, I tell you, way she latched it, I suddenly had some mercy for all them I'd used it on. I actually had to work my way out of it like I was in a match, 'cause she wasn't giving me no quarter. That was a cheap price to pay, though. All that savage monkey love I was getting. And then it all come apart. Jesus beat me. Put the bomb on me. When I woke up, I was out back of the carnival, lying on the grass with ants biting me. When I got to myself, Felina was gone. She went with Jesus, took my money, left me with nothing but ant bites on my nuts. She sounds shallow, as a saucer, kid. But once she slapped that hoodoo on me, I couldn't cut myself loose. Let me tell you, it was like standing on the railroad tracks in the dark of night, and you can see a train coming, the lights sweeping the tracks, and you can't step off. All you can do is stand there and wait for it to hit you. One time when we were together, we're walking in Mexico City where I had some bouts, and she sees a guy with a wooden cage full of pigeons, 6 or 7 of them. She has me buy all of them, like we're gonna take them back to the States. But what she does is she takes them back to our hotel room. We had to sneak them in. She puts the cage on an end table and just looks at the birds. I give them some bread, you know, 'cause they gotta eat, and I clean out their cage, and I think this girl is one crazed bird lover. I go and take a shower, tell her to order up some dinner. I take my time in there, shit and shave, good hot shower. When I come out, there she is, sitting at one of those little push tables room service brings up, and she's eating fried chicken. Didn't wait on me, didn't say boo. She was like that. Everything was about her. But right then I learned something else. I saw that cage of birds, and they were all dead. I asked her what happened to the birds, and she says, I got tired of them. I went and looked, and their necks was wrung. But why? Marvin asked. The old man leaned back and sucked his beer, took his time before he spoke. I don't know, kid. Right then I should have thrown my shit in a bag and got the hell out of there. But I didn't. It's like I told you about those train tracks. Christ, kid, you should have seen her. There wasn't never nothing like her. And I couldn't let her go. It's like you catch the finest fish in the world, and someone's telling you to throw it back, and all you can think about is that thing fried up and laid out on a bed of rice. Only it ain't really nothing like that. There ain't no describing it. And then, like I said, she went off with Jesus, and every day I get up, my heart burns for her. My mind says I'm lucky to be shed of her, but my heart, it don't listen. I don't even blame Jesus for what he done. How could he not want her? She belonged to whoever could pin the other guy to the mat. Me and him, we don't fight nobody else anymore, just each other. Every 5 years. If I win, I get her back. I know that. He knows that. And Felina knows that. He wins, he keeps her. So far, he keeps her. It's best he does. I ought to let it go, kid. But I can't. She really that bad? She's the best bad girl ever. She's a bright red apple with a worm in the center. Since that woman's been with Jesus, he left a wife, had 2 of his children die, 1 in a house fire that happened while he was out, and Felina gave birth to 2 babies that both died within a week. Some kind of thing happens now and then. Cradle death, something like that. On top of that, she's screwed just about everyone short of a couple of eunuchs, but she stays with Jesus, and he keeps her. He keeps her because she has a power, kid. She can hold you to her tight as liver cancer. Ain't no getting away from that bitch. She lets you go, you still want her like you want a drink when you're a drunk. The way you mentioned the fire and Jesus' kids, the 2 babies that died, you sounded like I didn't believe the fire was no accident, that the babies didn't die naturally. Yeah, kid. I was thinking about that cage full of pigeons. I was thinking about how she used to cut my hair, and how she had this little box she had with her. Kept it in the purse she carried. I seen her wrap some hair into the knot of a couple twisted pipe cleaners. Oh, hell. You already think I'm nuts.
Marvin shook his head.
No. No, I don't.
All right, then. I think she really did have the hoodoo on me. I read somewhere that people know spells can get a piece of your hair and they can use that as part of that spell, and it can tie you to them. I read that.
That doesn't mean it's true, Marvin said.
I know that, kid. I know how I sound. And when it's midday, I think thinking like that is so much dog shit, but it gets night, or it's early morning and the light's just starting to creep in, I believe it. And I guess I always believed it. I think she's got me in a spell. Ain't nothing else would explain why I would want that cheating, conniving, pigeon-killing, house-burning, baby-murdering bitch back. It don't make no sense, does it?
No, sir, Marvin said. And then after a moment, he added, She's pretty old now, isn't she?
Course she is. You think time stood still? She ain't the same. But neither am I. Neither is Jesus. But it's me and him. And one of us gets the girl, and so far he always gets her. What I want is to have her back, die quick, and have one of those Greek funerals. That way I get the prize, but I don't have to put up with it.
What's a Greek funeral?
Heroes like Hercules had them. When he died, they put him on a pile of sticks and such and burned up the body, let his smoke rise to the heavens. Beats being buried in the ground or cooked up in some oven, your ashes scraped into a sack. Or having to spend your last days out with that woman, though that's exactly what I'm trying to do.
Do Jesus and Philina live here in the city? Marvin asked.
They don't live nowhere. They got a motor trailer. And they got some retirement money, like me. Jesus and me worked other jobs as well as wrestled. You couldn't make it just on the wrestling circuit, especially the underground circuit. So we got some of that Social Security money coming, thank goodness. They drive around to different places. He trains, and he comes back every 5 years. Each time I see him, it's like there's this look in his eyes that says, "Beat me this time and take this bitch off my hands." Only he always fights like a bear, and I can't beat him.
You win, sure she'll go with you?
It's me or him, and that's all there is to it. Ain't nobody else now, me or him. It's us she's decided to suck dry and make miserable.
Can't you let it go? Marvin asked.
X-Man laughed. It was a dark laugh, like a dying man that suddenly understands an old joke.
Wish I could, kid. 'Cause if I could, I would.
They trained for the fight. X-Man would say, "This is what Jesus the Bomb does. He comes at you, and next thing you know, you're on your ass, 'cause he grabs you like this, or like this. And he can switch from this to this," and so on. Marvin did what he was told. He tried Jesus' moves. Every time he did, he'd lose. The old man would twist him, throw him, lock him, punch him, lightly. And even when Marvin felt he was getting good at it, X-Man would outsmart him in the end and come out of something Marvin thought an oiled weasel couldn't slither out of. When it was over, it was Marvin panting in the corner, X-Man wiping sweat off his face with a towel.
"That how Jesus does it?"
Marvin asked, after trying all of the moves he had been taught.
"Yeah," said the old man. "Except he does it better."
This went on for months, getting closer and closer to the day when the X-Man and Jesus the Bomb were to go at it. Got so Marvin was so focused on the training, he forgot all about the bullies. Until one day Marvin was by himself, coming out of the store two blocks from the old man's place, carrying a sack with milk and vanilla cookies in it. And there's Hardbelly. He spotted Marvin and started across the street, pulling his hands out of his pockets, smiling. "Well, now," Hardbelly said when he was near Marvin, "I bet you forgot about me, didn't you? Like I wasn't gonna get even. This time you ain't got your fossil to protect you." Marvin put the sack on the sidewalk. "I'm not asking for trouble." "That don't mean you ain't gonna get some," Hardbelly said, standing right in front of Marvin. Marvin didn't really plan on anything. He wasn't thinking about it. But when Hardbelly moved closer, his left jab popped out and hit him in the nose. Down went Hardbelly like he had been hit with a baseball bat. Marvin couldn't believe it. Couldn't believe how hard his punch was, how good it was. He knew right then and there it was over between him and Hardbelly, because he wasn't scared anymore. He picked up the sack and walked back to the old man's place, left Hardbelly napping. One night, during the time school was out for the Thanksgiving holidays, Marvin woke up. He was sleeping in the boxing ring, a blanket over him, and he saw there was a light on by the old man's bed. The old man was sitting on the edge of it, bent over, pulling boxes out from beneath. He reached in one and pulled out a magazine, then another. He spread the magazines on the bed and looked at them. Marvin got up and climbed out of the ring and went over to him. The old man looked up.
"Damn, kid, I wake you?"
"Woke up on my own. What are you doing?"
"Looking at these old magazines.
They're underground fight magazines. Had to order them through the mail. Couldn't buy them off the stands." Marvin looked at the open magazines on the bed. They had a lot of photographs in them. From the poster on the wall, he recognized photographs of X-Man. "You were famous," Marvin said.
"In a way, I suppose," X-Man said. "I look at these. I got to hate getting old. I wasn't no peach to look at, but I was strong then. Looked better than now. Ain't much of the young me left."
"Is Jesus in them?" X-Man flipped a page on one of the open magazines, and there was a photograph of a squatty man with a black mop of hair. The man's chest was almost as hairy. He had legs like tree trunks. X-Man grinned.
"I know what you're thinking. Couple mugs like me and Jesus. What kind of love magnets are we? Maybe Felina ain't the prime beaver I say she is."
The old man went around to the head of the bed and dragged a small cardboard box out from under it. He sat it on the bed between them, popped the lid, and scrounged around in a pile of yellowed photographs. He pulled one out. It was slightly faded, but it was clear enough. The woman in it looked maybe mid-20s. It was a full shot, and she was indeed a knockout. Black hair, high cheekbones, full lips, and black as pit eyes that jumped out of the photo and landed somewhere in the back of Marvin's head. There were other photos of her, and he showed Marvin all of them. There were close shots and far shots and sneaky camera shots that rested on her ass. She was indeed fabulous to look at.
"She ain't that way now, but she's still got it somehow. What I was gonna do, kid, was gather up all these photos and pile them and burn them. Then I was gonna send word to Jesus he could forget the match, that Felina was his until the end of time. But I think that every few years or so, and then I don't do it. You know what Jesus told me once? He said she liked to catch flies.
Use a drinking glass and trap them. Then stick a needle through them. String them on thread. Bunches of them. She'd knot one end, fasten the other to a wall with a thumbtack, watch them try to fly. Swat a fly? That's one thing. But something like that. I don't get it, kid. And knowing that, I ought to not get her. But it don't work that way. Tell you what. You go on to bed. Me, I'm gonna turn off the light and turn in. Marvin went and crawled under his blanket, adjusted the pillow under his head. When he looked at the old man, he still had the light on and had the cardboard box with the pictures in his lap. He was holding up a photograph, looking at it like it was a hand-engraved invitation to the second coming. As Marvin drifted off, all he could think about were those flies on the thread. Next day, the old man didn't wake him for the morning workout, and when Marvin finally opened his eyes, it was nearly noon. The old man was nowhere to be seen. He got up and went to the refrigerator to have some milk. There was a note on the door. "Don't eat heavy. I'm bringing Thanksgiving." Marvin hadn't wanted to spend Thanksgiving with his mother and the painter, so he hadn't really thought about it at all. Once his mother dropped him out of her mind, he had dropped the holidays out of his. But right then he thought about them and hoped the painter would choke on a turkey bone. He poured a glass of milk and sat in a chair by the ring and sipped it. Not long after, the old man came back with a sack of groceries. Marvin got up and went over to him.
"I'm sorry. I missed the workout."
"You didn't miss nothing. It's a fucking holiday. Even someone needs as much training as you ought to have a day off." The old man pulled things out of the sack. Turkey lunch meat, some cheese slices, and a loaf of good bread, the kind you had to cut with a knife. And there was a can of cranberry sauce. "It ain't exactly a big carving turkey, but it'll be all right," the old man said. They made sandwiches and sat in the TV chairs with a little table between them. They placed their plates there. The old man put a video in his aging machine, and they watched a movie. An old black and white one. Marvin liked color, and he was sure he would hate it. It was called Night and the City. It was about wrestling. Marvin didn't hate it. He loved it. He ate his sandwich. He looked at the old man, chewing without his dentures. Right then he knew he loved him as dearly as if he were his father. Next day, they trained hard. Marvin had gotten so he was more of a challenge for the old man, but he still couldn't beat him. On the morning of the bout with Jesus, Marvin got up and went out to the store. He had some money X-Man gave him now and then for being a training partner, and he bought a few items and took them home. One of them was a bottle of liniment, and when he got back, he used it to give the old man a rubdown. When that was done, the old man stretched out on the floor on an old mattress and fell asleep as easily as a kitten. While he slept, Marvin took the rest of the stuff he had bought into the bathroom and made a few arrangements. He brought the bag out and watered it up and shoved it in the trash. Then he did what the old man had instructed him to do. He got folding chairs out of the closet, 25 of them, and set them up near the ring. He put one of them in front of the others, close to the ring. At 4:15, he gently spoke to the old man, called him awake. The old man got up and showered and put on red tights and a t-shirt with a photograph of his young self on it. The words under the photograph read, "X-Man." It was Christmas Eve. About 7 that evening, they began to arrive, on sticks, in wheelchairs, and on walkers, supported by each other and, in a couple of cases, walking unassisted. They came to the place in dribbles, and Marvin helped them locate a chair. The old man had stored away some cheap wine and beer, and had even gone all out for a few boxes of crackers and a suspicious-looking cheese ball. These he arranged on a long fold-out table to the left of the chairs. The old people, mostly men, descended on it like vultures alighting on fresh roadkill. Marvin had to help some of them who were so old and decrepit they couldn't hold a paper plate and walk at the same time. Marvin didn't see anyone that he thought looked like Jesus and Felina. If one of the four women was Felina, she was certainly way past any sex appeal, and if any one of them was Jesus, X-Man had it in the bag. But of course, none of them were either. About 8 o'clock, Marvin answered a hard knocking on the door. When he opened it, there was Jesus. He was wearing a dark robe with red trim. It was open in front, and Marvin could see he had on black tights and no shirt. He was gray-haired where he had hair left on his head, and there was a thick thatch of gray hair on his chest, nestled there like a carefully constructed bird's nest. He had the same simian build as in the photograph. The bomb looked easily 10 years younger than his age. He moved easily and well. With him was a tall woman, and it was easy to recognize her, even from ancient photos. Her hair was still black, though certainly it came out of a bottle now, and she had aged well, looked firm of face and high of bone. Marvin thought maybe she'd had some work. She looked like a movie star in her 50s that still gets work for her beauty. Her eyes were like wells, and Marvin had to be careful not to fall into them. She had on a long black dress with a black coat hanging off her shoulders in a sophisticated way. It had a fur collar that at first glance looked pretty good, and at second glance showed signs of decay, like a sleeping animal with mange. "I'm here to wrestle," Jesus said. "Yes, sir," Marvin said. The woman smiled at Marvin, and her teeth were white and magnificent, and looked as real as his own. Nothing was said, but in some way or another he knew he was to take her coat, and he did. He followed after her and Jesus, and watching Felina walk, Marvin realized he was sexually aroused. She was pretty damn amazing, considering her age, and he was reminded of an old story he had read about a succubus, a female spirit that preyed on men, sexually depleted them, and took their souls. When Felina sashayed in and the old man saw her, there was a change in his appearance. His face flushed, and he stood erect. She owned him. Marvin put Felina's coat away, and when he hung it in the closet, a smell came off it that was sweet and tantalizing. He thought some of it was perfume, but knew most of it was her. Jesus and X-Man shook hands and smiled at each other, but X-Man couldn't take his eyes off of Felina. She moved past them both, as if unaware of their presence, and without being told, took the chair that had been placed in front of the others. The old man called Marvin over and introduced him to Jesus. "This kid is my protege, Jesus. He's pretty good. Like me, maybe, when I started out. If I'd had a broke leg." They both laughed. Marvin even laughed. He had begun to understand this was wrestling humor, and that he had, in fact, been given a great compliment.
"You think you're gonna beat me this year?" Jesus said. "I sometimes don't think you're really trying."
"Oh, I'm trying, all right," X-Man said. Jesus was still smiling, but now the smile looked pinned there when he spoke.
"You win. You know she'll go with you."
The old man nodded.
"Why do we keep doing this?" Jesus said.
X-Man shook his head.
"Well,"
Jesus said,
Good luck. And I mean it. But you're in for a fight.
I know that, X-Man said. It was 9 o'clock when X-Man and Jesus took out their teeth and climbed into the ring. Took some time to stretch. The chairs in the audience were near half empty, and those that were seated were spread apart like Dalmatian spots. Marvin stood on the outside of the ropes at the old man's corner. The old man came and leaned on the ropes. One of the elders in the audience, wearing red pants pulled up nearly to his armpits, dragged his chair next to the side of the ring, scraping it across the floor as he went. He had a cowbell in his free hand. He wheezed himself into the seat, placed the bell on his knee. He produced a large watch from his pants pocket and placed it on his other knee. He looked sleepy.
We do this 5 years from now, X-Man said to Marvin. It'll be in hell somewhere, and the devil will be our timekeeper.
All right, said the timekeeper. Geezer rules. 2 minutes rounds, 3 minutes rests. Goes until it's best 2 out of 3 or someone quits. Everybody ready?
Both parties said they were. Marvin looked at Felina. She was sitting with her hands in her lap. She appeared confident and smug, like a spider waiting patiently on a fly. The timekeeper hit the watch with his left thumb and rang the bell with his right hand. X-Man and Jesus came together with a smacking sound, grabbing at each other's knees for a throw, bobbing and weaving. And then X-Man came up from a bob and threw a quick left. To Marvin's amazement, Jesus slipped it over his shoulder and hooked X-Man in the ribs. It was a solid shot, and Marvin could tell X-Man felt it. X-Man danced back, and one elderly man in the small crowd booed.
Go fuck yourself! X-Man yelled out.
X-Man and the bomb came together again. There was a clenching of hands on shoulders, and Jesus attempted to knee X-Man in the balls. X-Man was able to turn enough to take it on the side of the leg, but not in the Charlie horse point. They whirled around and around like angry lovers at a dance. Finally, X-Man faked, dove for Jesus's knee, got hold of it, but Jesus twisted on him, brought one leg over X-Man's head, hooked the leg under his neck and rolled, grabbed X-Man's arm, stretched it out, and lifted his pelvis against it. There was a sound like someone snapping a stick over their knee, and X-Man tapped out. That ended the round. It had gone less than 45 seconds. X-Man waddled over to his corner, nursing his arm a little. He leaned on the ropes. Marvin brought out the stool.
Put it back, the old man said. I don't want them to think I'm hurt.
Marvin put it back, said, Are you hurt?
Yeah. But that cracking you heard was just air bubbles in my arm. I'm fine. Fuck it, put the stool back.
Marvin put the stool back. X-Man sat down. Across the way, Jesus was seated on his stool. His head hung. He and X-Man looked like two men who wouldn't have minded being shot.
I know this, X-Man said. This is my last match. After this, I ain't got no more in me. I can feel what's left of me running out of my feet.
Marvin glanced at Felina. One of the lights overhead was wearing out. It popped and went from light to dark and back to light again. Marvin thought for a moment, there in the shadow. Felina had looked older and fouler, and her thick hair had resembled a bundle of snakes. But as he looked more closely, it was just the light. The cowbell clattered. They had gotten some of their juice back. They moved around each other, hands outstretched. They finally clenched their fingers together, both hands. X-Man suddenly jutted his fingers forward in a way that allowed him to clench down on the back of Jesus' fingers, snap him to the floor in pain. It was a simple move, but it put the bomb's face in front of X-Man's knee. X-Man kneed him in the face so hard, blood spewed all over the matting, all over X-Man. Still clutching Jesus' fingers, X-Man stepped back and squatted, pulled Jesus to his face. X-Man pulled free of the fingers, and as Jesus tried to rise, X-Man kicked him in the face. It was a hard kick. Jesus went unconscious. The cowbell clattered. The timekeeper put the cowbell down and made his way to the ring. He climbed through and hitch-legged it over to Jesus. It took almost as much time as it would take for a blind man to find a needle in a haystack. The timekeeper got down on one knee. Jesus groaned and sat up slowly. His face was a bloody mess. The timekeeper looked him over.
"You up for it?"
he said.
"Hell yeah," Jesus said.
1-1,
yelled the timekeeper, and he made his slow pilgrimage back to his chair. Jesus got up slowly, went back to his corner, trying to hold his head up high. X-Man was sitting on his stool, breathing heavily.
"I hope I didn't break something inside the old cocksucker," he said.
X-Man closed his eyes and sat resting on his stool. Marvin was quiet. He thought the old man was asleep. 3 minutes later, the cowbell clattered. Jesus huffed loudly, creaked bones off the stool, stuttered stepped to the center of the ring. X-Man came out in a slow shuffle. They exchanged a few punches, none of which landed particularly well. Surprisingly, both seemed to have gotten a second wind. They tossed one another and rolled, and jabbed, and gouged, and the bell rang again. When X-Man was on his stool, he said,
"My heart feels like a bird fluttering."
"You ought to quit," Marvin said. "It's not worth a heart attack."
"It ain't fluttering from the fight, but from seeing Felina."
Marvin looked. Felina was looking at X-Man the way a puppy looks at a dog treat.
"Don't fall for it," Marvin said. "She's evil. Goddamn evil."
"So you believe me?"
"I do."
"You think maybe she has those pipe cleaners with your hair with her?"
"How would I know?"
"In her coat, maybe?"
"Again, how would I know?"
And then it hit the old man. He knew what Marvin was getting at.
"You mean, if she did have,
and you got them?"
"Yeah,"
Marvin said. Marvin left X-Man sitting there, made a beeline for the closet. He opened the door and moved his hands around in there, trying to look like he was about natural business. He glanced back at X-Man, who had turned on his stool to look. The cowbell rang. The two old gentlemen went at it again. It was furious, slamming punches to the head and ribs, the bread basket, clutching one another, kneeing in the balls. Jesus even bit the lobe off X-Man's ear. Blood was everywhere. It was a fight that would have been amazing if the two men in the ring were in their 20s in top shape. At their age, it was phenomenal. Marvin was standing in the old man's corner now, trying to catch X-Man's eye, but not in a real obvious way. He didn't want him to lose focus, didn't want Jesus to come under him and lift him up and drive the old man's head into the ground like a lawn dart. Finally, the two clenched. They went around and around like that, breathing heavy as steam engines. Marvin caught X-Man's eye. Marvin lifted up two knotted pipe cleaners, dark hair in the middle of the knot. Marvin untwisted the pipe cleaners, and the hair floated out like a puff of dark dandruff, drifted to the floor. X-Man let out his breath, seemed to relax. Jesus dove for him. It was like a hawk swooping down on a mouse. Next thing Marvin knew, Jesus had X-Man low on the hips in a two-arm clench and was lifting him up, bending back at the same time so he could drive X-Man over his head, straight into the mat. But as X-Man went over, he ducked his head under Jesus' buttocks, grasped the inside of Jesus' legs. Jesus flipped backwards, but X-Man came up on his back, not his head. Instead, his head was poking between Jesus' legs, and his toothless gums were buried in Jesus' tights, clamping down on his balls like a clutched fist. A cry went up from the crowd. Jesus screamed. It was the kind of scream that went down your back and got hold of your tailbone and pulled at it. X-Man maintained the clamp. Jesus writhed and twisted and kicked and punched. The punches hit X-Man in the top of the head, but still he clung. When Jesus tried to roll out, X-Man rolled with him, his gums still buried deep in Jesus' balls. Some of the oldsters were standing up from their seats, yelling with excitement. Felina hadn't moved or changed her expression. Then it happened. Jesus slapped out both hands on the mat, called time, and it was over. The elders left, except Jesus and Felina. Jesus stayed in the bathroom for a long time. When he came out, he was limping. The front of his tights were plumped out and dark with blood. X-Man was standing, one hand on the back of a chair, breathing heavy. Jesus said,
"You about took my nuts, X-Man. I took one of your towels, shoved it down my pants to stop the blood. Them's some gums you got, X-Man. Gums like that, you don't need teeth."
"All's fair in love and war," X-Man said. "Besides, old as you are, what you using your nuts for?"
"I hear that,"
Jesus said, and his whole demeanor was different. He was like a bird in a cage with the door left open. He was ready to fly out.
"She's all yours," Jesus said.
We all looked at Felina. She smiled slightly. She took X-Man's hand. X-Man turned and looked at her. He said,
"I don't want her,"
and let go of her hand.
"Hell, I done outlived my dick anyhow."
The look on Felina's face was one of amazement.
"You want her," Jesus said. "That's the rule."
"Nah,"
X-Man said, "ain't no rule."
"No?"
Jesus said. And you could almost see that cage door slam and lock.
"Nah,"
said X-Man, looking at Felina.
"That hoodoo you done with the pipe cleaners?
My boy here undid it."
"What the fuck are you talking about?"
Felina said. They just stared at each other for a long moment.
"Get out,"
X-Man said. "And Jesus,
we ain't doing this no more."
"You don't want her?"
Jesus said.
"No.
Get out. Take the bitch with you. Get on out." Out they went. When Felina turned the corner into the hallway, she paused and looked back. It was a look that said, "You had me, and you let me go, and you'll have regrets." X-Man just grinned at her. "Hit the road, you old bitch." When they were gone, the old man stretched out on his bed, breathing heavily. Marvin pulled a chair nearby and sat. The old man looked at him and laughed.
"That pipe cleaner and hair wasn't in her coat, was it?"
"What do you mean?" Marvin said.
"That look on her face when I mentioned it. She didn't know what I was talking about. Look at me, boy. Tell me true."
Marvin took a moment, said, "I bought the pipe cleaners and some shoe polish. I cut a piece of my hair made it dark with the shoe polish, twisted it up in the pipe cleaners. X-Man let out a hoot.
You sneaky son of a bitch.
I'm sorry, Marvin said. I'm not.
You're not?
Nope.
I learned something important. I'm a fucking dope. She didn't never have no power over me. I didn't give her. Them pipe cleaners and the hair, hell. She forgot about that fast as she did it. Just some way to pass time for her. And I made it something special. It was just me giving myself an excuse to be in love with someone wasn't worth the gunpowder it would take to blow her ass up. She just liked having power over the both of us. Maybe Jesus will figure that out, too. Maybe me and him figured a lot of things out today. It's all right, kid. You done good. Hell, it wasn't nothing I didn't know deep down. And now I'm out of excuses. And I'm done with her. It's like someone just let go of my throat and I can breathe again. All these years, and this thing with Felina, it wasn't nothing but me and my own bullshit.
About 7 in the morning, X-Man woke up Marvin.
What's the matter?
Marvin asked. X-Man was standing over him, giving him a dentureless grin.
Nothing. It's Christmas. Merry Christmas.
You too, Marvin said.
The old man had a t-shirt. He held it out with both hands. It said X-Man and had his photograph on it, just like the one he was wearing.
I want you to have it. I want you to be X-Man.
I can't be X-Man. No one can.
I know that. But I want you to try.
Marvin was sitting up now. He took the shirt.
Put it on, said X-Man.
Marvin slipped off his shirt and, still sitting on the floor, pulled the X-Man shirt over his head. It fit good. He stood up.
But I didn't get you nothing.
Yeah, you did. You got me free. Marvin nodded. How do I look?
Like X-Man. You know, if I had had a son, I'd have been damn lucky if he'd been like you. Hell, if he'd been you. Of course, that gets into me fucking your mother, and we don't want to talk about that. Now I'm going back to sleep. Maybe later we'll have something for Christmas dinner.
Later in the day, Marvin got up, fixed coffee, made a couple of sandwiches, went to wake X-Man. He didn't wake up. He was cold. He was gone. There were wrestling magazines lying on the bed with him.
Damn,
Marvin said, and sat down in the chair by the bed. He took the old man's hand to hold. There was something in it. A wadded-up photo of Felina. Marvin took it and tossed it on the floor and held the old man's hand for a long time. After a while, Marvin tore a page out of one of the wrestling magazines, got up, and put it to the hot plate. It blazed. He went over and held it burning in one hand while he used the other to pull out one of the boxes of magazines. He set fire to it and pushed it back under the bed. Flames licked around the edges of the bed. Other boxes beneath the bed caught fire. The bedclothes caught. After a moment, the old man caught too. He smelled like pork cooking. Like Hercules, Marvin thought. He's rising up to the gods. Marvin, still wearing his X-Man shirt, got his coat out of the closet. The room was filling with smoke and the smell of burning flesh. He put his coat on and strolled around the corner into the hallway. Just before he went outside, he could feel the heat of the fire warming his back.